This is a Penobscot Baywatch podcast. I'm Ron Huber. On August 7, 2011, Bob Goldman of South Portland, Maine, called into the Penn Bay Report to discuss plans for offshore wind power extraction off Maine. Topics of our 14-minute discussion are, 1, the possible pitfalls for lobsters and lobstering of siting windmills in the Gulf of Maine, and 2, the relationship between mainstream conservation groups and the wind power industry when it comes to public interest oversight of wind power.
Hello, this is WRFR. You're on the air.
Hey there, Ron. It's a listener from South Portland calling you. My name is Bob Goldman.
Well, hey, Bob. What's going on?
Well, I wanted to share, first of all, my thanks to you for the YouTube video that you did, that was put on YouTube about placing these massive industrial wind turbines close to shore. I'm one of these folks that has a lot of common sense. I listen to things with an open mind, and because of that, I oppose destroying Maine's mountains with these industrial turbines to feed Massachusetts ineffectively and inefficiently at the state of Maine's expense, massive expense.
Mm.
One thing I was doing a little brainlessly until I saw your video was, you know, being happy to kind of push this offshore. Something in the back of my mind said, Bob, don't make one mistake to the next mistake. And when I saw your video, and I encourage people to look at it online, it made me stop being stupid about placing these things offshore. And as your video said, too close to shore, there's a possibility that they would not cause harm to our fisheries and lobstering if they were placed far enough offshore.
Right.
So I just wanted to thank you, Ron, because I don't think enough education went on with the mountain wind, and that's why we're kind of in this mess with these out-of-state corporations aided by some in-state greed-blinded people. You know, we didn't have enough education 5, 6, 7 years ago to avoid what's turning out to be a catastrophe for our visitor-based economy and our ecology.
Right.
So,
and let me ask you something. Maine has many conservation groups. Some of them are very heavily funded, multi-million-dollar operations. Why are so many of them seemingly abandoning their conservation mission on behalf of wind power?
Books could be written about that, Ron. And I don't. Maybe one book, and the one word would say money. Unfortunately, we have Maine Audubon in groups like the Appalachian Mountain Club as well. And these groups are funded with old money, and old money wants, for some reason, they want more money. And if you wave money in their face and support, you know, it doesn't matter, like Harvard, if they have endowments that are multi-billions of dollars. And, of course, Maine Audubon doesn't have multi-billions, but they have millions, as does the AMC. And
yeah, and some very lovely holdings, too, I might add.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, the holdings are always limited, and it's on their terms. They wouldn't support the kind of conservation of our ocean resources or land resources, mm-hmm. unless somehow it makes it into their pockets. Especially the benefactors, Ron, the people who fund Maine Audubon and the Appalachian Mountain Club, they're the kind of folks that look at their, quote, portfolios. And if their portfolios are making money from federal subsidies, massive subsidies, to destroy our mountains with mountain wind, they'll put it offshore, too, if it puts enough money in their pocket. And they'll leave the rest of us to deal with it.
And they'll have these groups there to act as their flat catchers.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, our system is set up, even though we're supposedly a democracy, our system is set up. It has turned out to serve very powerful monetary interests, even short-term interests. If we were looking more at the long-term, and our system planned and educated more of us for the long-term, we probably could avoid some of these things because we really would be more deliberate and would not be looking for short-term infusions. that don't work. You know, the people, some of the folks that are supporting wind in the mountains are union people. They're getting some hundreds of jobs that are very short term. Hey, you know, we could get jobs if we tore down Mount Katahdin brick by stone by stone.
Right.
And maybe that's not a good idea to destroy something that, you know, is part of the main cultural identity and also part of our economic lifeline.
Right. I think that is a really important point that hasn't been discussed perhaps enough. On the coast especially, the prospect of having these immense displays of blinkers and a dull roar in the background all the time for the shoreline resorts can be just terrifying.
Yeah, it is terrifying, and of course what your video did so well, it's so beautifully done visually, and it's very short, so people don't have to say, oh my God, I have to read a book to understand this. You know, when this is a solution, where instead of building these turbines, if they could work offshore, where there is actually more wind consistently, not in our mountains, which is inconsistent, it's foolish, but offshore, to know that, okay, it can actually screw up our lobster ecology and our fisheries.
Right, and scallops and others too, by the way. I just focused on the one species for simplicity here.
Right. Well, it makes a lot of sense because, you know, just like George's Bank that everybody's heard of off the coast of Massachusetts, you know, the Gulf of Maine has its own fisheries dynamic and ecology. It's wonderful to learn about that stuff, by the way. And if we listen not to political science but to ecological science, and it tells us, you know, experience, I think your video quotes a scientist in Norway where they've actually put these things offshore and have had a chance to study them. And this scientist, as your video educated me, clearly said that there's a problem with putting them too close to shore where young fish actually breed and grow and turn into adult fish that we can then harvest sustainably. Well, so if that could happen off of our own main coast, why repeat a mistake that they already made in Norway? Why can't we here in Maine learn, okay, if we're going to do this, listen to sound ecological science and place them maybe beyond the horizon, which is only like 30 or 40 miles offshore. It doesn't have to be hundreds of miles. And then our fisheries are protected and our lobster industry is protected, and possibly we could have the best of all worlds.
Right, it's very possible. As you say, the challenge is when you have cheerleaders for doing it the quick and dirty route. You know, I mean, the way that Angus King has rushed about. Did you know that Angus King, whatever he calls his shell companies, is now eyeballing the offshore? He wants to jump in there too.
Yeah, well, one of the things it's called is the tragedy of the commons, when we have this shared, like our air, the common air that we breathe and our common ocean. You know, problems can be shoved from one to the other if we don't listen to reason and common sense. You know, the people that I have been talking to and learning from that live in the Maine Mountains, mm-hmm. that, you know, for generations have had homes there or have camps there, you know, they talk about the hydrology, streams in springs that were flowing normally that have been destroyed. And somehow, that doesn't sound right. It doesn't sound like the right thing to do, not just visually, not in my backyard thing, but from a sound scientific perspective. And also, it's screwing up people's peace of mind and the joy that they feel in living here in Maine. Why should we do that? Why would Angus King and Rob Gardner want to shove that down the throat of Mainers who, a large majority, as we learn more and more about it, don't want it?
I don't know. What is it? Is it simple egotism?
Boy, that has to be a lot of it. Mixed in with the greed is this chest thumping. This is mine.
Well, maybe if we would offer to, like, change the name of Mount Katahdin to Mount King, he would then lay off. Would that be enough?
I don't think so. I think he now wants, you know, monetary king or something. I don't think he's looking looking for things named after him.
Just literally power, huh?
Yeah. At our expense, and, you know, fortunately, Ron, and I hope the lobstermen and the fishermen and women will do this as well, one of the things that's encouraging, finally, with mountain wind, the assault on Maine's mountains, is the Maine sporting camp owners and the Maine guide associations, groups like that who are traditional, you know, nobody's going to accuse them of being lefty wing nuts or something.
No.
These are regular Mainers, and, you know, even our own governor, it talked about perhaps industrial wind is not the greatest thing to do. He said that in 10 years, he thinks we're all going to be kicking ourselves that we did all this destruction. So let's stop it now. Let's not put the wind turbines close to shore where they have a very good chance of screwing up our lobster industry and our fisheries. And do the right thing from the beginning this time. My hope would be that we put a stop to industrial wind in the Maine mountains and don't repeat the same stupid destructive mistake in our oceans.
Well, you know, I hope so too. You know, the big challenge, I think, is that that a lot of conservationists have little difficulty with is that it's all a public land issue out there in the ocean wind thing, and it's not private land at all.
There's a lot of ignorance, and people leave it up to, this is the what I consider like a criminal thing about Audubon, Maine Audubon, and the Appalachian Mountain Club. The people that do respect those clubs and say, gee, if they're putting their weight behind it, it must be okay. Boy, this is where these people could be put in jail or something, because I do believe that when you take a public resource like the mountains and our oceans and you monitor, you put short-term monetary considerations ahead of everything else, and to boot, you're an environment, a supposed conservation group. You know, I did have a discussion. I'm a member of some of these groups, and not because I want to be, but I want to know what they're doing, and they mail me information so I can keep abreast of what they're doing. And I asked for a meeting with the director of Maine Audubon, and I met with him in Falmouth briefly. And, you know, he's a nice person. He's a former legislator. What the bottom line, Ron, what he told me, and this is the bottom line, is he said, Bob, Maine Audubon has opposed a small number of these wind farms, but for me to oppose too many, our members are invested in these. They've made investments. Their money is on the line. So, in other words, Ron, even if it's, we now know, most of us know it's a scam, it's a destructive scam, it hurts us, they are married to it. Their benefactors would raise such a stink. So go ahead and continue the destruction, and because their benefactors are going to benefit.
Shades of Afghanistan. I mean, it's like you're saying, we've got the tiger by the tail, so we can't let go.
Look, thank you for letting me vent a little bit, and thank you for educating me so I won't be another dummy who's talking about moving this stuff offshore without understanding. Wait a minute, don't transfer the destruction from one part of our wonderful state to another part of our wonderful state. In the case of offshore wind, what I know now, thanks to you, is that there is a potential for it to be placed 30, 40 miles offshore and hopefully accomplish what we want with clean energy. But, you know, it's kind of like Vietnam. If you have to destroy a country or you're part of your state in order to save it, there's something wrong with that picture.
That's right. All right, well, look, thank you very much, Mr. Goldman, and I look forward to hearing from you again some point.
Thank you, Ron, for the great work you do. Thank you.
All right, carry on then. Bye-bye.
Bye.
For more information about offshore wind power, its pluses and minuses, go to www.penbay.org.